Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, Melanie, this week we had some interesting things go on. We had some fun. I did want to start out by talking a little bit about scouting. We're back to virtual scouting again because pretty much everybody either has COVID, is quarantined because they had COVID, or has been exposed to someone who's got COVID. And so we're in virtual meetings for the rest of the month, which is kind of a bummer. I know the kids are dying to get out, you know, January. I mean, I suppose it could be worse. It could be the summer and you can't get out.
I mean, right now, today, it was 10 degrees outside. Yeah. I'm not sure that
it's,
you know.
This morning, early this morning, it was 4 degrees. Oh, man, I can't imagine what it would have been like to camping this weekend.
Burr.
A hobbit. And then, we did have a committee meeting where we talked about some planning for upcoming stuff this year. And one of the things that came up, a couple things. So we got a camp again this summer. And we're going to have four kids at camp this year. We're going to have Bella, Sophie, Ben, and Anthony are all going to be at camp. And then, so that's an expense. And the way they do camp, as we mentioned last time, is it's only $250 for the whole week, which is wicked cheap, but it's still $1,000. And then, you know, for the four of them. Then they mentioned that the troop that we go to camp with is going to Gettysburg over Memorial Day weekend. They're doing a 4-day trip. They get in a bus on Friday, drive overnight.
Which would be super cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been, but they would love to go back. And they're going to camp there. They're going to do the tour of the battlefield on Saturday. There's a hike that they have planned for Sunday. Then there's the drive back on Monday. So, which sounds awesome, but it's also $250 for the weekend. For the, you know, for 4 days. And it's like, I mean, this would be for even if they all didn't want to go, like Sophie was like, I don't really want to go. But even if it was just like a couple of them, it's like $500. And then the creme de la creme, the National Jamboree is coming up next year, 2023. Okay. And this is where, this is sort of a once in a lifetime thing where kids come from all over the country. Not every kid goes. Usually there's a limit to the number of kids that come from any particular council, never mind troop. And they were saying that it costs $2,500 to go to Jamboree.
Per kid.
I'm not sure why. It's like in West Virginia. Like, why is... What, are they providing, like, food? Like, it just seems excessive, but okay. But $2,500.
How does that break down? Like, is that... travel
covers
expenses
everything.
Plus
travel
food, plus
food, the events there, you know, they have to put on the event, so the you know, BSA has to have this big event, and they have stuff that happens at the things. They have musical acts, and they have performers, and they have speakers, like they have like big celebrities come and speak to the kids, and there's all kinds of stuff. And then there's activities, like, you know, special hikes, and they have special things that you can really only do at the, it's a Bechtel Summit, which is a national, what do they call it? It's a special camp, a special, expedition camp. I forget what they call it. Anyway. So it's a huge opportunity and to meet kids from all over and that sort of thing, but it's $2,500 and I'm looking at going, so it, If the four scouts, which I don't think Anthony would be eligible next year, you have to be over a certain age. But even if three of them went, that's $7,500. It's like everything with scouting is just so, everything is so expensive. Such as scouting when you have a big family. As anyone who out there who has big families knows and is nodding along, it's just so darn expensive to do anything. So anyway, I was thinking about what we should do for vacation this summer, and we should talk about that soon. whether we want to go camping or try to get a place to stay or something like that. So that, because it's, even though it's January, it's that time of year when you want
to
start.
Well, if you want to need to make reservations, places are going to start filling up.
Right. We've talked about like maybe getting a weekend back at the place in Plymouth, which we liked a lot. Or do we check and see if we can get the lake house, or do we make plans to just go camping several times or something? Because we thought about going camping in Maine last year, which we never got a chance to do. So we should talk about that. It would be fun. Anyway, speaking of outings, you had an outing this week.
We did. My friend Julia, who lives in Binghamton, New York, came up to Boston with her son, Ronan, who's just turned 16. So this was his 16th birthday present. He's really into sailing ships. And so they wanted to visit and tour the USS Constitution. And so they met up with us at the Constitution in Charlestown. And we toured the ship. And then we hung out for a bit.
I have to say, I am super disappointed that I couldn't go. I wanted to go. I was planning to go. But then I was looking at the amount of work I had to do, and I just couldn't swing it. But the Constitution is my very favorite thing in Boston. I love that ship. I have an inordinate love for that ship. I mentioned before I was able to go on the turnaround cruise on a 4th of July with my dad one year. I mean, it's just, it's so gorgeous. Such a beautiful piece of history.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. So we're going to go back, though. We'll definitely go back. We'll go back in a warmer time.
Yeah, we did actually go to the Constitution Museum. We got a later start to the day because we couldn't go until after Isabella's online class was done. And so Julia and Ronan had already done the museum by the time we got there. So we just did the tour of the ship, which was fine.
Yeah, it's just free, by the way, since it's a U.S. Navy active duty warship.
Right. So the tour of the ship is free. The museum costs money.
Yeah.
So we did the free section.
Right. We may actually get a membership at the museum, I think. That would be nice. It would, even if we only go once, it's actually cheaper than paying for everybody, which is actually a nice difference from most places. Usually we need to go at least a couple times for a family membership to be worth it, which I wouldn't be opposed to. But yeah, it is an unusual time of year to go to an outdoor thing in Boston.
It actually turned out to be a really nice day. We'd had a couple of days of single digits, you know.
Single digit temps, yeah. Very cold.
Single digit temps, very cold. And then on Thursday, it was gorgeous. It was like high 30s.
Oh, it was in the 40s even.
Yeah, maybe it might have been low 40s.
Well, yeah, maybe down there it was low 40s. Here it was high 40s.
Anyway, it was beautiful. We ended up actually having, we'd all brought our lunches, and so we had a picnic outside. In January. Now, I know our southern friends are saying you had a picnic when it was 40 degrees outside. My friend Rebecca was talking, she lives in Florida. She was saying that it was 60 degrees and she was yelling at the kids for not having jackets. But yeah, I guess I've acclimated to Massachusetts. I remember when I was in college, I would not have had picnics when it was even 60 degrees out.
Right, right. Well, how was the tour itself? I mean, was it worthwhile?
Yeah. I mean, the tours are done by active duty sailors who are
they're trained to talk about the ship.
Right. But I felt like it's a quick overview. It's not a deep dive with lots of details. Which I mean, I could have listened to her go on all day with lots and lots of details. It's not that kind of tour. It's a quick overview. In that way, it was a little
this
bit.
This is the gun deck. These are the guns. The guns fire projectiles that were such and such weight.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad, but I've been on lots of historic ships, and among all the different historic ship crews, in terms of like the historical interpretation, I'd say this was middling. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't as informative as like as much detail as I would want. But I understand at the same time that they're going for a sort of common denominator. And probably most tourists don't want the kind of level of detail that I would like. So
yeah,
it's fine.
So there's a World War II era destroyer there now as well, the Cassin Young. Did you go to that?
We did not go on to the Cassin Young. We did see it there, and we thought about it, but we decided to hang out and chat instead.
So we're definitely going back. Yeah.
Definitely going back.
Nice. So this week, you, shifting gears, you were going to the library.
So, yeah, in December, when I went to the library, one of the librarians told me that they were contemplating doing away with library fines. And I thought, oh, that'll be nice. Well, this week, Sophie and Bella started their online classes, and Sophie needed her textbook to do her homework. And I had thought that we already owned the book for the class, but it turned out we didn't. So I went online to check it out, see if the library had it, and they did have it. But I couldn't put it on hold because my account was blocked because I owed money. Like, late fees and fees for books that had been lost, which I think they're probably not actually lost. I think they're probably in a box somewhere. Anyway, so I grit my teeth and paid the $29 in late fees and put the book on hold that Sophie needed for her class. The next morning, I get an email from the library announcing that they have indeed decided to eliminate late fees. And they're actually going to do it retroactively, so all outstanding debts will be forgiven. The day after I paid off $28 in fees, I was a little miffed. Although when I went to pick up the book, the librarian said that since most of the fees were paying for lost books, that would not have been.
They're not wiping out lost.
They're not wiping out the. Although maybe they would have. I don't know. If I hadn't paid it, would that have gotten wiped off? It might have.
So
the world will never know.
The world will never know. So we need to find the lost books and turn those in. And
right. And maybe I'm not 100% sure that they will refund it if I find the lost books. We might just own them now.
Right.
Which, oh, well.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's at least we're not going to get the have to deal with the late fees in the future.
Now, mind you, we've
been paying a lot of money in late fees.
Well, although, mind you, our library is not charging late fees, and some other libraries in the consortium are not charging late fees. Other libraries are, though.
Oh, so some books that we get out will still have late fees.
It depends on the branch, like the specific, like, because the way it works is our library is in a network with other town libraries, and each town's library sets its own
late fee policy.
And so while I can borrow from any library in the network, they all have different policies.
Okay. So we'll still be paying late fees for some stuff.
We may still be end up paying late fees. I mean, I could check for every book to see which library it's coming from. And
well, that's excessive.
Excessively difficult. Yeah.
So you mentioned the you were getting a book for Sophie for her class. So how are we doing with school?
Yes. Yeah, so this week we started back to school, and Sophie's starting for the first time to take a class on homeschool connections. And she's taking a science class about marine mammals that's going to focus on pinnipeds, polar bears, and otters.
What's a pinniped?
Pinnipeds are like seals and sea lions and manatees, animals that have flipper feet.
Ah, okay. Pinnipeds.
Yes.
Flipper feet.
Oh, cool.
Sounds like a fun class.
Yeah. This is, so it's sort of the marine mammals that aren't cetaceans, because the cetacean class was in the fall. That's whales and dolphins and porpoises. Mm. So, yeah, she's looking forward to it, especially after seeing all the seals this fall, both on Cape Cod and in Plymouth.
Including the headless dead one.
Including the headless dead one, which her teacher has already is a friend of mine, has already asked to borrow the pictures of the Headless Dead Seal for her class. So that will make an appearance sometime this term, which I think will be really fun. Sophie will be able to say, I found that. She did. She was the first one to see the Dead Seal.
Yes. So. Cool. So she's taking that class.
And Bella's taking the second half of her chemistry class.
Yes.
And yeah, we're easing back into school.
Of course, that will be helped by you've got the homeschooling bookshelves organized this weekend.
Yes. I had the kids unpack the boxes like as a chore. And so they just were taking things out of boxes and shoving them onto shelves. But there was no rhyme or reason or organ or order to it. And I've been putting off actually tackling the organization for a while, partly because I just reorganized those shelves last fall when you guys went camping, when the week the kids were at summer camp.
Right.
And so I was like, part of my brain was just like, you just did this. I don't want to do it again. But also because I kind of had this feeling that the organization that we had was not optimal, but I hadn't quite figured out what would be more optimal. So I was sort of in decision lock, but I started just pulling things off the shelf that I knew didn't belong there. Like, you know, when we first moved in, we were just like kind of conveniently shoving stuff onto the shelves because they were empty space.
Right.
So I started pulling off the stuff, and then I started putting things into the shelves where they did belong. And I asked the kids each have like a dedicated shelf. And I asked them to say, okay, where your shelves were was not necessarily the optimum spots. So here, if you could have any shelf on this bookcase to be your own personal shelf, which one would you pick? So they picked new shelves and we rearranged things.
It's one of those IKEA shelves where it's like cubbies, like the rectangular square.
Right. It's a 5x5, square grid.
Yeah.
So there's 5 across and 5 down. So it's like 25 cubbies to stick stuff in, which seems like it would be plenty, but somehow it always feels.
Several of the rows, the bottom rows, are blocked by the dining room table and the bench.
Right. So I use the bottom rows mostly for storage of stuff that we don't need to access very much. Mm. Like, you know, the kids' art projects that they can't quite bring themselves to throw away. I gave them each a plastic bin to stick those in, and like workbooks that we will need in the future or workbooks that they've filled in, but I haven't got around to throwing away because I feel like I need to keep them for some period of time.
Mm. Well, that's good. I'm glad we're getting back to it. Bella has started doing math again with me in the morning. She does Khan Academy. Algebra, I think she's doing still math stuff, concepts that or calculus, because I'm not familiar with some of the stuff she's doing. I'm like, oh, you've passed where I was in high school. And so she started doing that again, which is good. And she was telling me the other day that she was struggling to pick it up again, but she feels like she started to make progress again. So that's good.
Yeah, we're all kind of just feeling rusty, and so many things fell by the wayside this fall. I think it's going to be a while before we're really back in full swing, but we've taken some baby steps, and that's good.
The good news is that all kids in schools have all fallen behind with the pandemic. So,
right. Well, this is true. I mean, we actually kept working pretty steadily last year when lots of schools were locking down and closing and kids were missing lots
Zoom
of classes.
Schooling.
And, right. So I feel like we kind of transferred our disruption to
the fall.
To this fall.
Yeah.
Although I know people whose kids were in Zoom classes all fall, too. Oh, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there were plenty of people like that.
Anyway, yeah, we're getting there.
Yep. So let's talk about food and a recipe we made this week. And this, because of the cold, we had the ultra cold single digit days. It was, we were trying to figure out what to eat. And I said, I want a hot soup. We need comforting soup.
Yeah, we're still kind of haven't got back into the swing of things in terms of meal planning yet. We're
we're
struggling.
That's been kind of kicked in the butt by the supermarket situation. It's been really hard to rely on the market having chicken, for instance, and
right.
chicken this with no chicken thighs. And then they had the no bone in chicken thighs, which is usually fairly inexpensive and a good buy for us. But they had the boneless, skinless chicken thighs. So they only had the organic, super expensive ones. So I picked up a package of chicken breasts, regardless of the cost. It wasn't on sale. I almost only ever buy it on sale. I'm like, we need something to eat, so I have to buy the expensive stuff. So that's been hurting us a little bit. Although there's still lots of meat in the freezer from last summer.
But a lot of it's grilling stuff. It's grilling meats,
yeah.
as opposed to roasting.
Yeah. So
or just, soup meats.
Because we're displaced from the house, I couldn't grill it. I mean, it's fine. It'll last. And I can, as soon as the weather turns, I can start grilling again. Usually it's around March. I can get the grill out. But
right.
Yeah. But in the meantime, so anyway, we decided to make a soup, and we wanted something a little different. And so we went for something we'd made once before, similar.
A couple times before.
Yeah.
It's a Moroccan inspired soup, and it's got a lentil base, and it's got chickpeas. I'm not really a huge fan of lentils unless they have lots and lots of other textures to kind of balance out that lentil texture. I know some people really love lentils, but I just find them kind of, I don't know, gritty.
Mm-hmm.
But this one has chicken in it. It's got potatoes, carrots, celery, onion, bell pepper. And it's got like a sort of a spicy flavor and lots of bright lemon juice. I love it.
Yeah. So for spices, so we started with this America's Test Kitchen recipe.
Right.
And the spices in that are garlic, ginger, coriander, paprika, cumin, cinnamon too, red pepper flakes.
Right.
Okay. So what did you do?
Yeah, it starts off with grated ginger and garlic, like as those fresh roots flavors. I think I used some turmeric in addition to like the paprika and red pepper flakes and cumin, cinnamon. Yeah, I mean, I think I added a little bit of Ethiopian berbere that you had got and...
Berbera seasoning mix. Yeah, spice mix.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it was really flavorful. I was just kind of grabbing stuff from the spice cabinet and throwing it in that felt.
So you did something interesting, which with because the recipe called for some chard or something like that. But we don't have any chard. But you grabbed frozen kale?
Right. We had some frozen kale, but it had lots and lots of stems in it. And it was just like, I hate the texture of the stems when the frozen greens. So I adapted the garlic and ginger technique. Instead of grating the ginger and mincing the garlic, I used a technique which I learned from Mater Joffrey, I believe, which is to take the chunks of ginger and chunks of garlic and just put them in with a little bit of water. And you can use a blender, but I use like put them in your blender bowl. But I use my immersion blender because my immersion blender's cup is easier to clean out.
Mm-hmm.
So you blend up the garlic and the ginger with a little bit of water. And then after you've sauteed your onions and carrots and celery and peppers and stuff, then you just pour that liquid in and you cook it until all the water is evaporated. It's a really, really easy. It's so much easier than messing around with a garlic press or a ginger grater. It's just. And it uses all of the garlic and ginger.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that flavor.
But you did that with?
And so then I did that again also with the kale. I just put it in my cup with some water and used my immersion blender until it was basically like pureed kale. Which did change the color of the dish. Instead of being like a beautiful orangey red color, it was more of a dull brown color because, you know, we know that red and green make brown.
Yeah.
So it kind of made it a less pretty soup. But on the other hand, kids who would definitely have picked out larger chunks of chard and kale
mm-hmm.
did consume some of the kale.
I think it added a nice texture too. I liked the It helped thicken the soup.
Right. And if we had had cauliflower in the past, I would have used some frozen cauliflower to puree, but I had used the frozen cauliflower for a curry earlier in the week. I really, really, really love, I've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I love pureed cooked cauliflower as a thickener in soups and stews and curries. It's a fairly neutral flavor. Unlike, you know, kale is a little bit stronger flavor, but cauliflower is a very neutral flavor. It almost tastes like potato.
Mm.
And it makes it nice and thick. And it's a great way to get more of those vegetables into kids who would otherwise pick out, like Anthony will pick out all the carrots and the peppers and the chickpeas, and there will be a pile of them on his side of his plate after he's done eating. But he couldn't pick out the kale, and he can't pick out the pureed stuff. So it's always worthwhile to puree at least some of the vegetables, because then they just become part of the sauce.
I mean, there are some people who are like, oh, don't hide vegetables in your food, in the kids' foods, because it doesn't teach them to like the vegetables. Like, well, that's all nice, high and mighty, but they're still not going to eat it unless you hide it in the food.
Right.
When they get older, they learn.
We do try to get him to take bites of the vegetables that he doesn't prefer, but he is very, very averse to some tastes and textures that he will eat when they're minced small enough and mixed in with other flavors that he does like.
Right, right.
You know, sometimes you prioritize getting the vegetables into the kid.
Yeah.
Over getting the kid to like the vegetables.
I'll put a link to the test kitchen recipe, which is not exactly the same, of course, as we say, but it's the where we started, and it might be a nice place to start. And when you look at it, you know, think about adding things like lemon. If you have preserved lemon, which we've had in the past, that's a really good flavor in this kind of soup.
It does call for lemon juice in the recipe. I added the grated lemon zest as well. And yeah, like you say, preserved lemons are so good.
Mm. Yep. And we've made preserved lemon in the past, but we're thinking about like buying it because it might be easier and better anyway. So
the recipe calls for brown lentils. I had red lentils on hand and I used those instead.
That worked.
I actually like better.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't love lentils, but I feel like the red ones are...
They break down a little more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little nicer.
Cauliflower, like you said, potato, carrots, bell pepper, white wine. Those are all things we've added to the recipe. So when you see the recipe, think about adding some other stuff like that.
I really like adding wine to soups. It gives it a lot more body and aromatics.
You didn't add orzo like the recipe calls for, right? But you made rice for the side to put on the side.
Yeah, I just made rice on the side, and I think most people put some rice in their bowl, or else they ate it like a curry with like the
on a plate.
It was thick enough that you could just kind of put rice on a plate and then spoon the soup on top.
Yeah.
It was the thickness of a thick curry.
It was like a curry or a thick stew. Yeah, it was good. And then, try it out. See what you think. All right, moving on. Let's talk about things we've been reading and or watching. I don't think either of us have a book to talk about this time. I'm still working on mine. And you said you...
I've started three different books that I'm not really in love with any of them yet, but I'm just at the beginning, so we'll see.
All right, let's talk about stuff we watched then. I watched the final season of The Expanse, which is a sci-fi series based on the book series, The Expanse.
Right.
And it was 6 seasons. The first season was on the Sci-Fi Channel and got canceled, stupidly. The Sci-Fi Channel would make some dumb decisions in the past. It's really wild. There was a huge fan outcry. Amazon picked it up and made it a streaming series there for 5 seasons. And it's such a good story. It's a near future science fiction, and it's they try to be...
It's set in our solar system, right?
Yes, and there's no fast and light travel, quote unquote. They do encounter alien technology, which is like a gate I think it's the end of the first season that lets them gate to other parts of the galaxy. But the ships
to other parts of the galaxy, or other parts of the solar system,
galaxy.
Okay, so they are able to leave the solar system?
Right, to go to other planets. Yes, other solar systems. But that's like later on. But human technology is, there's no artificial gravity. Ships have to travel at sublight speed from one end of the solar system to the other. I mean, it is...
So it takes...
Yeah, there are no lasers. There's, you know, missiles and railguns. So
it takes weeks and months to get places?
Yes, and in fact, the books really emphasize the months it takes. they really compress time in the TV series, but they just have
that. Yeah, that makes sense. They always do.
I really love the look of the series. I love the design of the ships. The characters are great. The main character, Holden, is not quite as good as he is in the books because he's supposed to be older. He's older and sort of world weary.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's too young to be world weary. He just comes across as kind of, he's fine, but he's not old enough. But other characters, I've mentioned before, I think in the series, the UN, well, this politician, in case you haven't seen it, I don't want to ruin anything. This politician who works for the United Nations, which is now the world government. Her name is Christian Avasarala, and she's this Indian woman, like from India, who is foul-mouthed and political, like to the T. She's like a consummate politician, but she's straight shooting and doesn't take guff from anybody. And played by, I can never pronounce her name, this Iranian actress, who is just so good. She's perfect as this character. So I just really enjoyed it. I think the series wraps up okay. The books go further than where the series ends, and there's like three books that they go past it, and there's major developments in the story after this, and they hint at those developments in the season. And that's one of the weird things about it is they reveal things, like they have storylines. You're like, why did you tell these? Why did you include any of this? It has nothing to do what happens in the main storyline, and I know, as someone who's read the books, what those have to do with, but if I hadn't read the books, I'd be looking at going, what was the point of this? It's really setting up the season 7 that's never going to happen.
Weird. I wonder why they decided not to make the rest of the series.
Maybe Amazon decided not to spend the money anymore. Maybe the actors were done after 6 seasons. I don't know. I mean, 6 seasons is a lot for a TV series, but, you know, there's more story to tell. So I don't know. It was really weird. The books are also wrapping up. The last book just came out. So I'm curious to see what happens with that.
Maybe now that I know all the books are out, I might actually pick it up and read it.
Yeah.
If I have my druthers, I really prefer starting series after the books are out because otherwise
you lose track in waiting for a year for the next book to come out. Oh, I get that. I'm totally with you on that one.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, and then this series, the TV series, actually helped. Because when I kind of got lost, that I think that's what happened is from one book to the next with a year.
Right.
And then I got lost. I'm like, well, I don't understand what's happening, but in the politics of what's going on. And this, the TV series, because it has to simplify everything.
It simplified it to the point where I had a better idea of what was going on.
Yeah. So that was good. But I highly recommend the books. I highly recommend the series. They're both excellent. Definitely worth your time if you're at all a fan of science fiction, especially hard sci-fi. And that's what this is
right.
Sci-fi. I watched last night Eternals, Marvel's Eternals, which is the latest Marvel movie or one of the latest Marvel movies.
No spoilers.
I might reveal a little bit.
Oh, fine.
But that's because you don't need to watch it. This movie has no bearing on the rest of the MCU.
None.
I mean, they mention it. They mention things that happen. Oh, what about the who do you, at one point they're all sitting around going, who do you think's going to take over the Avengers? Who's going to lead the Avengers, you know? And another point, it's like, why didn't you guys stop, you know, help the planet combat Thanos? Yeah, so and that's it.
So people are aware this movie are aware of the
right. So here's the premise. This is what they tell you right at the very beginning. There are the Celestials, which includes Ego,
Peter Quill's
father. Peter Quill's dad, yes. So there are the Celestials, and also includes the Skull Nowhere in Guardians of the Galaxy, the skull that the people are living in. That skull is a Celestial. So they're these gigantic, immense beings, bigger than planets, okay, that predate the existence of the they're essentially the gods. They predate the existence of the universe, and they brought the universe into being. They brought light into being. They brought life. And the Eternals are these immortal people that serve the Celestials, and their job is to go to planets and to fight against these creatures called deviants that want to destroy the light and destroy life. That they that's their purpose for existence. And so they defend life on these planets. And so we follow these Eternals sent from Olympia to Earth to defend us. And they come 7,000 years ago. They come 5,000 BC, and they are here. And their names are like Icarus, Circe, Athena, Gilgamesh, Tindu. In other words, all of these creatures.
They're the origins of human mythology.
Right. So Athena, Icarus, Ceres, obviously right. Gilgamesh is Gilgamesh, Enkidu, so on and so forth. And there's Sprite, which is she's an eternal child. So she's like an eternal teenager. And
man, that's got to stink. Well, always being a teenager.
That becomes a plot point. There's Fasto, who is they all have their own particular quirk. One is fast. One is a technological genius. One is like Athena's a warrior. Gilgamesh is a warrior. Circe can transform things, help things grow. Okay, like Ceres, the goddess of the cereal.
Wait, grain. Ceres or Circe?
Her name is Circe, but she's
like the sorceress who drops you, Odysseus, on his way home from Trojan War.
Maybe. I thought it was more having to do with Ceres, the goddess of grain and growth and agriculture.
It sounds like they've
maybe
combined the two characters, Circe and Ceres. Yeah.
There's Ajax. She's the leader. She also heals.
And she?
And she communicates with Arishem, which is the celestial that they're working for. Their god, so to speak. And Icarus flies, shoots laser beams out of his eyes, so on and so forth. Right. Doig, does mind control. Sprite is an illusionist. I forget the name of the one that does the fast, runs fast. Am I missing anyone? It's a very large group. Kido, he shoots laser blasts out of his fingertips or something. Anyway. All right, so they come to Earth. They become these eternal beings, these people of legend. Then we jump ahead to today. They killed all of the deviants 500 years ago, and now they just entered into life waiting for their next job and then the next mission, you know. And then the deviants show up again for some reason, and then all kinds of things get revealed that changes their perception of themselves, of their mission, of the celestials, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So one of the interesting things, it sounds very interesting. It's a huge cast. It's a 2-hour and 37-minute movie. It's a long movie.
Wow.
It's not a great movie. It's okay. It's not really that good. Some of the motivations seem weird. Like, I don't understand why you're doing this. That this seems like you're doing this because the plot tells you to, not because your character's internal motivation makes sense.
Ugh, I hate that.
Yeah. And then we kill off people here and there for no good reason, mostly because the cast is too big. and because we have to, like, one of the deviants has this ability to absorb the powers of the Eternals that it kills. And it eventually becomes humanoid and can talk to them, and they never do anything with that. Like, they're just like that. Like, what is the point? Like, cause he's not actually the central bad guy, it turns out. And it's like, well, what's the point of that? Like, it was just a weird, like, hanging.
It made sense in the comic, and
they've translated something from the comics that didn't work on the screen. So one of the fun things. So, Circe is the viewpoint character. She's our viewpoint.
Okay.
She's now living in London as a history professor. Haha. And she's in a relationship with this other professor, Dean Winters, who is actually going to turn out to be another superhero in a later movie.
Ah.
If you're a Marvel fan, you know who he is as soon as you hear his name. It's played by Kit Harington, who is Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. The Icarus, one of the Eternals, and Dean Winter is just a regular human. Icarus is played by Richard Madden, who played another character, his brother, in Game of Thrones. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And they're both Icarus and Cersei used to be married, used to be in a relationship and aren't anymore. They broke up. And now she's in a relationship with this Dean Winter. And so there's a scene where the two guys meet and there's this whole like moment where they kind of stare at each other, which is a beat that you know is put in there because they know all the Game of Thrones fans are going, oh, because there was tension between them in the Game of Thrones. And now there's tension them here. It was a very funny moment. I thought I'd point that out. But one of the things that, so the cosmology and the theology of this whole movie is just so kind of whack. Like the idea, the posits the idea that the Celestials are the beings that create the universe and they create solar planets. They make suns and build planets and create the people on them.
Okay.
God doesn't do that.
Right.
These eternal celestial beings. And they do it not out of goodness, but because the people become a way, without revealing too much, the people are consumed by the Celestials as they are born. Their presence is, and their energy is necessary to birth new Celestials as the old Celestials die.
Okay, so they're sort of...
Yeah, and to me, I was kind of thinking, wow, what an interesting contrast. In this, you have gods that consume people and sacrifice them, the people, for their own ends, versus the reality, which is we have a god who sacrifices himself, gives himself to his people, and lets us consume him.
Uh-huh.
It's a total inversion of the reality. And in this movie, it's kind of horrific. It's horrible and evil. And without revealing too much, it turns some of them against the gods, the Celestials. I mean, if you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you know that the Celestials aren't good guys. You know, and also Thanos isn't eternal, by the way.
Okay.
So he figures in...
I'm getting really confused between the whole Celestials Eternals thing. Well, I mean, I'm finding, as you're talking, I'm like, wait, which one is which?
Exactly. It's just confusing. I mean, on screen, you see, okay, the guy that's bigger than a planet, yeah, he's a Celestial. But when you talk about it, it's kind of confusing. And it's like, There's also a couple of woke elements in it, which are... there's one sort of woke-ish element in it, which was... it wasn't, like, offensive or anything. It just... You know it was thrown in there. For representation. And then they made a big deal before the movie came out about it's the first sex scene in a Marvel movie.
Uh-huh.
It's not much of one, frankly. I mean, you don't see anything. It's not like we're putting skin on the screen. But I still wouldn't, this wouldn't be one that the kids would watch.
I would prefer not to have sex scenes, frankly, because I would like my kids to watch them. Like,
right. Well, the good news is, they can skip this and not miss a thing. This movie doesn't fit in the MCU, really, apart from just being, this isn't it, a Marvel movie based on a Marvel comic books.
Okay.
So you're not missing anything. Anyway, I probably even went on too long for that anyway. But
I was going to say, I've been watching
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
and that is also a show that the kids would not want them to watch because there are sex scenes in it and a lot more about relationships that are too adult. Yeah,
but primetime network TV sex scenes, but still.
But still, more than I want.
Right, right. Well, we don't let our kids watch primetime network TV. But
right.
So people have a sense of.
Yeah, I mean, not. Yeah, but still.
Yeah, there's plenty of situations in that where I would say that's not. It's
not really kid appropriate.
No. I mean, there's stuff in the Marvel movies that I would rather where there's language. Like, we watched Guardians of the Galaxy with them today, and there's some language in it.
Yeah.
And there's that the girl in the ship at the beginning where, like, you don't have to, it doesn't exactly say that they slept together the night before.
Right.
But it's heavily implied.
Right.
I'm going to guess that Bella probably got the implication, but maybe the younger ones probably didn't.
Right.
Yeah, but. There are things in the movies which...
But I think that there are the kinds in the movies you could kind of not know what's going on, and it probably goes over kids' heads a lot.
Right.
Whereas I felt like most of the content, there was definite content in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which
It's not subtle.
Would not be. It's not not nearly so subtle.
Yeah.
Not subtle at all. Really.
I still enjoyed the series, but you're right. It's not something I would watch with the kids.
No, yeah. It's nothing that I personally have a problem with myself watching. It's not graphic like Game of Thrones. I couldn't watch. But it's enough that I was like, okay, this is definitely not a kid-friendly show, which is kind of too bad because there are some nice plot lines that I think mm-hmm. that they would enjoy. It's just.
I should mention, by the way, Expanse, the very first season, they do have brief nudity, and that's it, once ever in the entire series. So once you get past that, it's like they were like, ooh, look, we're on cable. We can be, transgressive. And then after that, they're like, okay, we got that out of our system, and we'll just do a regular series. There's lots of bad language. That's the de rigueur now for streaming and cable, but they didn't. There's no more nudity after that. But I should point that out. So we did watch Guardians of the Galaxy with the kids. As
that
predicted,
was
they
fun.
Loved it. Yeah,
I watched it with you before and I enjoyed it. Again, another one where it was so much more fun. Like I was laughing out loud
with the kids.
Yes, it was. It's good.
It's especially fun when you get to a point and you know what's going to happen and they're like, oh no. Oh, what is he doing? Oh, that is. Oh, like when he's doing the dancing at the end and they're like,
yes.
So embarrassing. Like, why are you dancing?
That was fun.
That was fun. And then Groot and Baby Groot is between Baby Groot and Baby Grogu. There's a stiff competition there.
No, hands down, Grogu wins. But Baby Groot's pretty cute.
They are pretty cute. So, yeah. So we watched Guardians of the Galaxy. Next up is Avengers Ultron, Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, which is my personal least favorite Avengers movie.
Interesting.
Marvel movie.
That is interesting. That's your least favorite. Is it too confusing? Is it just too violent?
It's too long. Like, the fight scenes just drag, and there's not enough. I didn't feel like there was enough interesting interpersonal like character. It's a very much a plot driven movie as opposed to a character driven movie. And
is that the last one Whedon did? I think it's the last one Joss Whedon did.
Yeah. I just feel like it's really plot driven. It's very like lots of fights, lots of action, not enough
character development.
Character.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sets, you need to watch it. It sets up
everything
that follows.
Right.
Obviously.
I mean, the Sokovia Accords is a major plot throughout all of the phase 3 and 4.
Right. But that said, I mean, and maybe when we watch it, I will revise my opinion and I will like it better watching it with the kids.
Especially having seen WandaVision and.
Right. I mean, I am looking forward to revisiting, like, because this is where Wanda and Vision are introduced, obviously.
Yeah.
And maybe that will make it more interesting because I'll pick up on the details
that
I
missed. You can ask
the
question that
through.
All of us have, which is, where did Wanda's accent go? Elizabeth Olsen said, I'm not doing the accent anymore. So, cool. Yeah, so that'll be our next one next week. And then Ant-Man, and then we're on to phase 3, I think it is. After that, the next set of movies. I mean, we're making our way through it pretty quick, I have to say. I feel like we're making some progress.
One a week is actually pretty quick.
Yeah. Although, phase 3 and phase 4 have a lot of movies in them.
So many movies.
Yeah. And then this, once we get to the series, the streaming series, it's going to be even take longer to go through those. So, but it'll be fun. All right. So that's what we've been watching. Let's quickly move to some Catholic talk. This is this Sunday was a wedding feast at Cana Gospel, the annual Gospel of the Wedding Feast at Cana, which everybody loves to tell the same old joke about Jesus' first miracle was to keep a party going. But Father Roger Landry, who's a friend, he was tweeting today that when you look at the 20 to 30 gallons of water in the jars, the 6 jars each holding 20 to 30 gallons.
Where do you get the 20 to 30 gallons? Just like archaeological knowledge of.
I think it's because it was the type of jar that they talk about. They're the cleaning jars. the jars for the ceremonial washing.
Uh-huh.
They would be, yes, we know how big those were from archaeological evidence.
Okay.
And so he did the math and figured that Jesus made 912 bottles or 76 cases of wine.
That's a lot of wine.
And I was wondering, like, there's no way to know how big the wedding, how many people were at the wedding.
We don't know how many guests were there.
Right. But I can imagine how long that, like, how long it took to drink all that. Like, can you imagine 912 bottles? Like imagine like a regular, like a, our wedding. If we'd had like bottles of wine out, How long would it take to drink 912 bottles of wine at our wedding?
Was their wedding lasted?
Weddings were days.
Were days.
Yes. But that's a lot of drinking. That's still a lot of drinking.
He made a lot of wine.
He made a lot of wine. A lot of really good. And they had been already drinking. So, yeah, this was a lot of wine. Father Willie Raymond was the celebrant today at Mass that we went to. And he was saying that I like to imagine it was a nice Cabernet Sauvignon, which is kind of funny because modern wines did not exist. I wonder if they have grapes from back then. That would be interesting.
Interesting to know.
But
what the varietals were.
Yeah. Any type of wine that you drink today is fairly new within the last 1,000 years.
Say, right.
Comparatively fairly new. I think wines back then tended to be spiced. They weren't just they added spices and stuff.
Right. They didn't tend to drink wine the way we do, like just straight
fermented grapes.
Yeah. Right. They often had like different flavors added to them. And then of course they watered them down because they were like super strong.
Right. You didn't want to like the everyday wine drinking you or beer drinking was watered down because it was, the idea was to, kill bacteria. Well, although they didn't know it was bacteria, but it was safer to drink than it would have been to drink just plain old
water.
So, kind of interesting. So I don't want to talk primarily about the wine, but one of the things that Father brought up was when Jesus talks to Mary, he calls her woman. And you often hear priests comment like that's to our modern American ears. That sounds overly cold. It sounds cold.
Or disrespectful.
Or disrespectful. It's his mother. Woman, what is this to me? But what Father points out is woman is Eve. Eve's name means woman. And so Jesus is addressing Mary as the new Eve. You know, Eve, what is it you're asking of me? What is this to me? Why are you, what? Tell me why you're saying this to me. My time has not yet come. And Mary doesn't cajole, she just says, Mary, as the new Eve, says, do whatever he tells you, which was a counter to what the original Eve said, which was, don't do what he told us to do. And so Mary is in her faithfulness, in her obedience to authority, to the authority of God, is do whatever he tells you. So I thought that was kind of interesting that Mary here is being the new Eve.
Right.
And then Jesus does what the woman asks, as sort of a counter to Adam, who did what the woman asked, but it was a bad thing that Adam did, that Eve was asking him to do, and he followed along, whereas Jesus was doing a good thing.
Well, except Adam and Eve were doing what they wanted to do, whereas Jesus is
doing what his mother asked him to do.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's following the fourth commandment. He's obeying his mother and honoring her.
Honoring his mother.
Right. Yeah. And the Gospels remind us that Jesus was obedient to his parents. Mm-hmm. So he's being a good son. He's obeying his mom. But she's also deferring to him because she does not tell him what to do. It's a very interesting back and forth because she doesn't tell him what to do.
Go make wine for these people.
She just says, they don't have any wine. And then she says to the servants, do what he tells you to do, which leaves it up to him to decide what to do.
It's your will. Here's the situation. Whatever you believe is the right thing to do, I trust you will do it. And then turns to the others and says, do whatever he tells you to do.
Which assumes that he's going to tell them to do something, though. Right. So she set it up where she's kind of expecting him to do something, but she's leaving it up to him as to what to do.
If you decide not to help those people, it's on you.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. But what struck me is that this is also something that Mary tells to all of us. Like, she's telling it to the servants at that moment in Cana at the wedding. But these are also words for all of humanity. Do what he tells you to do. Do whatever he tells you to do. That's what Mary's ultimate message to us is do what he says.
Mary points to Jesus.
Right. With her whole self, she points us to Jesus and says, do what he tells you to do.
Mm.
And I love that. I just...
Well, especially given that these are the last words that Mary is recorded saying in the Gospel of John. The last thing she says is, do whatever he tells you. I mean, that's pretty good. I was saying to Melanie before we started that it kind of reminds me of, like, mom's going out. She's leaving the oldest son in charge. And she turns to the rest of them and says, okay, I'm going out. You do whatever he tells you to do. He's in charge.
And, of course, it's interesting coming from John, too, because John, of course, is the one that Jesus gave Mary too. He told John to watch after Mary, like, she's your mom. And he told Mary, he's your son. So I imagine that John and Mary had this really special relationship because she went to be John's mother. He went to take care of her as his mom. That's really kind of awesome.
Yes.
And I love the fact that he picks up on this theme of mothers and sons, of obedience, and of Mary as the new Eve. And I think also the fact that it's a wedding feast, like, Jesus is the bridegroom. His first act as a public figure is to announce himself at a wedding.
Yes. Family is at the heart of his ministry. Family is at the heart of who he is for us. I mean, that's an important, I mean, he is, if you think about it, Jesus is the bridegroom and the church is his bride. I mean, that bridal imagery is key to understanding Jesus' relationship to us. So it doubly makes sense that his public ministry would begin with a wedding, at a wedding feast. I mean, The eternal banquet in heaven is the wedding feast of the Lamb. So in one sense, by keeping the wedding feast going with the wine, it prefigures the wedding feast in heaven that never ends.
The unending, never running out of food or drink feast of heaven.
With the best wine possible. Pretty cool. So, all right. I think that should do it for us this time. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Matthew D., Evan S., Marika D., Father Daryl M., and Matt M. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. We'd love to hear your feedback, anything you have to say to us about anything we've talked about. You can comment on the show at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And I'll have links from our discussion in our show notes on sqpn.com. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page, retweet us on Twitter where we're at SQPN, and leave us comments wherever you find us. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.